Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Calvin.
And I'm Rose.
And this is a talk show dedicated to home-based education.
With us today is the Briggs family. Paul and Jean Briggs have five biological children, and I think that's a nice big family. last year when we talked to them, they had 17 adopted children, and they had homeschooled for 24 years, experiencing firsthand some of the challenges of homeschooling children, both biological and adopted, and some with learning and emotional and physical challenges. And I would just love to welcome Paul and Jean to the show. Paul and Jean, would you give us an update on your family, and were you able to adopt? I think we left you, and you were working on the adoption of two children from Bulgaria. So catch us up.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here this morning. Yes, we were able to complete that adoption. God blessed us mightily by giving us an extra special Christmas. We arrived home on Christmas Eve.
Wow.
With our latest son and daughter. Gracie Jane is now 7. She was 6 at the time, and Andrew is 5. And all are doing well. We're certainly enjoying the spring weather and able to get outside and enjoy the sun and stretch the legs pretty regularly now. And the adoption has been going very well. These latest children have some more severe needs than what we have had in the past, and they're going through many of the normal adjustments with the routine changes and then some extras with some of the just the neglect that they had experienced, and now just coming into the home and experiencing loving brothers and sisters and activities all around them. And it's one of the biggest joys we have is to see the progress that is made here every week. So we feel very blessed to add these two latest ones and feel blessed to be in this time of year right now. And excited to share the news that God has opened the door that we are actually pursuing our next adoption. It's certainly not by plan here, but the time between these seems to be shortening unexpectedly in many ways. But there is a special need little girl and her brother that we are pursuing the adoption of and have just got it started into that process here as well. Rick's family is doing well, and we're off and running.
Wow. Praise the Lord. You know, there's nothing like having the ability to communicate directly with God. And when I think of this family, I think of, you know, their lives have to be supported by prayer and constant communication with God, because time is running short. You can just look at the world around us and see that this little planet is just shaking and shimmering under the throes of sin. And I know that God is wooing to your family, Jean and Paul, those that he really wants for his kingdom. And I want to talk more about that in a minute. It's back to Aussie the otter. And you know, God gives us these little creatures just as little gifts. You know, you love to open up a gift. And every time I see a little creature out in nature, I think, God's giving me a little present. We are talking about an otter, and the title of this chapter is Alone in Paradise. It was a rare and perfect Alaskan day. The air was peaceful, and the surface of the lake shimmered like a mirror. Not a ripple broke the stillness of this usually restless water, and the blue sky and trees on the mountain were perfectly reflected on the surface of the lake. From his perch high above the lake, the great eagle watched the southern shoreline for the tiny ripples made by surfacing lake trout. He noticed an ever-widening V-shaped ripple not far from the rock-strewn shore. A small creature swam slowly at the surface, a telltale wake trailing behind it. The rippling disappeared, then the little animal dived underwater, then reappeared when the creature came back. and continued swimming slowly along the water's edge. The eagle watched intently but didn't move from his perch. If he had been hungry, he would have dived from his perch and plucked the small animal from the water. The ripple was caused by Ozzie. Well, I'm glad he didn't do that. Silently and swiftly, the baby otter glided through the water so smoothly that he hardly seemed to be moving. Then, holding his short, stubby legs close to his body, the pup dived, twisting his body through the water as does a snake. A sudden burst of bubbles escaped his mouth as he abruptly changed directions with a quick thrust of his webbed hind feet. As his nose broke the surface, he took a breath and dived again, cruising at a top speed of 6 miles per hour. Even though his eyes adjusted easily between underwater and surface viewing, Ozzie didn't notice the beauty of his surrounding. He was looking only for his family. Gazing out across the lake, he called out in a squeaky, high-pitched whistle, "Wee, wee, wee," but there was no response. He listened intently, but the only sounds he heard were the soft cackling of geese and the deep croaking of frogs. He could see very far, since otters are nearsighted when not in the water, so he used his keen sense of smell and touch. A fat blue heron, standing on one leg in the shallows, squawked in protest when Ozzie's furry face suddenly surfaced beside him and disturbed his slumber. And we'll end there. That next week, we start Chapter 3, No Fish. So Ozzie is still trying to find his family after that terrible mudslide. We're going to talk to Jean first. Jean, do you ever say no when someone comes and wants to adopt or wants you to adopt a child, like an agency or a family that might know of a child?
Yes, we do, because we actually feel that our adoptions, our children, even our bio children, are given to us by the Lord. And so we spend some time in prayer and seek His will. And then we've always, I journal, as I shared before. We can return to my journal and see, or Paul journals, the scriptures that he's given to us, and we pray about it. And we have said no to children, even though we're involved in another adoption now, just 4 months from the time we brought Andrew and Gracie home. We have been approached by another family for another child, for another adoption, and we did not pursue that or get that adoption or step into that, but we did with this, these two children that we are adopting, and they're from Ghana. And we just kind of follow the Lord's will, or what we believe is the Lord's will.
Even while we've been in country on an adoption and have had the opportunity to adopt other children, we have had children presented to us that we have said no to. So even though it's a large number of yeses, there have been some no's in there as well.
Yeah, I think it probably is takes many people's breath away, the idea of adopting so many children. Hey, we're talking with Paul and Jean Briggs, and they've adopted now 19 children, and they have 5 biological children and have homeschooled them all.
Paul and Jean, I have a question for you. I was thinking about what you've been saying about adopting children, and how did you know that God wanted you to devote your life to adopting children?
Well, I guess I'm probably the better one to start out with that.
Okay.
As a child, I had always had a heart for orphans. I was drawn to a lot of books that I read, Orphan Train. I enjoyed the movies like Annie and Oliver. And I also had a heart for special needs children, or children who are kind of on the outskirts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a natural thing, I think, a love that God placed in my heart. And I was very loved by my parents. It was very hard for me to read these stories or see the movies and think that some children did not have that love. And then ultimately, my relationship with Jesus led me to an even bigger love. And I shared the story of how I chose my spouse, or my spouse chose me. I had a babysitting job, and I knew how important it was for my future man, husband that I married, to mm-hmm. love children. And so Paul babysat with me on our first date, and he did wonderful. And that's been 38 years ago.
So are you saying right up front you kind of had an idea in your mind that you might adopt?
I was going to work with orphans.
Okay, yes. Very good.
I felt that call even before I actually got saved. I think the love that the Lord put in my heart was there when I was a child. And then as I responded to it, you know, it grew, and then he brought me my husband, and obviously who adopts?
So,
and do what we do if you don't have the love of the Lord in there.
Yeah, so Paul, did you have any ideas that you might be doing something like this before you met Gene?
No, not really. Actually, when we met in the first years of high school, and at that time, I knew of the Lord. I was a good person, active in my youth group and all, but I didn't really come to know the Lord and accept him personally until my 30s. So the first part of our relationship... again, Gene carried the spiritual burden for this, but obviously as we stepped into this in a larger way and with the faith that I had stepped into there, it was just, again, we found very early on with our first that all we did was say yes. Once we said yes, God took care of the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And there were even moments when we said yes and the doors closed, but God, I think, was looking for that openness at the time.
Mm.
Once we said yes, God took care of the rest. I love that little statement because, you know, we sometimes get so bound up with all the cares of this world, and we're specifically told in scriptures not to let the cares of the world choke out that relationship with Jesus Christ. I love that statement. Thank you for sharing. I was thinking of Paul babysitting and wondering, Jean had said that she came from a very loving family. Paul, did you have the same nurturing in your family so it already came naturally for you?
Yes, I was fortunate to have grown up in a home with, as being the oldest of four. My parents are still married after 57 years now. Mm. And still alive. And I did grow up in a home where, again, with my brothers and sisters all under the same parents and felt loved that way. And obviously their parenting and their love affected me and enabled me, I believe, to have the foundation to open up to this call that God's had on my life.
Well, how do you schedule time for just the two of you?
That's a good trick, actually, and I do better at it sometimes than at others, but it's really a matter, I think, of being balanced, both in being spontaneous and being intentional, and you can never rely too much on one or the other. Spontaneous-wise, I mean, you have to take advantage of opportunities. Sometimes it may be just the two of us going on a doctor's appointment where we have to drive, you know, for several hours and be gone half the day, and to us that can be a date, because...
Mm-hmm.
Either during the surgery time we're together or during the ride back and forth or whatever. So we take advantage of those. And other times we haven't had to get as formal as putting time on calendars and daytimers and such, but we do look forward to at least a date night a week. Typically we'll go out one night a week. So with 12 teenagers in the home, we do have built-in babysitters, but... We have to be a little selective there at times, but again, it does give us the opportunity to have child care while we are gone, and we keep it in moderation as far as how long we're gone and frequency and such, but again, between, you know, spontaneous and balanced, you just have to take advantage of those opportunities.
So, Paul, how has God blessed your life as you continue in this adventure?
Goodness, you probably need several days to fully answer that.
Oh, yeah, just about a minute to get us started here.
Probably as anybody in ministry and in life, when you are in a situation where you have to depend on God, that the challenges turn into blessings. And to see God in a very real way, to have that kind of experience over and over again, is a tremendous blessing, because in this ministry, like others, you have your mountaintop experiences, and we go through these adoptions. You see God's hand move in some awesome and very, you know, personal and specific ways. And then afterwards, you know, you're living in the valley here, and you deal with life's day in, day out challenges. But having seen God at work and knowing He's there and knowing He's provided really gives you that hope, that reassurance, that strength when you're living the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the blessings that I get the most enjoyment from is seeing that come alive to the kids. because when we have situations in the family, Christ being the center, we tie back. And so when God has been real and we've been able to share that real experience, then that's just a strength, and that's just a real blessing that it's just wonderful to be able to have.
Another question that I have for you, Paul or Jean, is can you tell us how did your first adoption take place? What was the story behind that?
I'll certainly be glad to. And actually, we're a family with two firsts. Our real first happened 24 years ago, mm-hmm. almost here, with Abraham. We had our three biological children. Just had a miscarriage, and we were attending church regularly. We had gone to a weekend event on a Saturday, come home very, very late, and kind of went to bed thinking, well, you know, it's so late, we probably won't make it to church in the morning. And sure enough, I didn't, but Jean did. And at church that morning, they presented about a missions trip going down to Mexico. And the Lord got a hold of Jean's heart. She did travel on that team with other members of the church. I was at home with her other children. And again, not intending to adopt, but while there, God just really bonded her heart to little Abraham down there. And Abraham was two at the time, not quite three, had been beaten severely recently, and had learned to walk, and was blind, and really didn't have the legal paperwork and such. It was kind of an impossible situation, but a very wonderful child. And God brought us back in 3 months to work through the adoption. He put people in our path. He opened the doors. We were able to miraculously bring him back legally into the country and to complete the adoption. So that really started us. Abraham was raised with ultimately our five biological children, and we raised them all until about 8 years ago, where we had that initial family unit of six and came upon the opportunity to host children from an international adoption program. And the hosting didn't work out, but there were children available from a previous hosting, and we decided to adopt them. And from that, it's rolled into our existing, our most recent 18 adoptions in the past 8 years. So kind of two different firsts there.
Fantastic. I'm going to ask Paul about nurturing and bringing up young men and what you do to help them understand the importance of treating women kindly and lovingly, and how they should find their wives. What do you intentionally do it, or do you just walk the talk?
Well, I some of both, and hopefully enough. But as in many things, you know, we need to model it first, and that's where hopefully I try to model that in my actions towards Jean. That's the biggest part. It's obviously not what we say, it's what we do. And that's carried over from, you know, teaching about this subject or others as well. So modeling is the first part of it. And that takes on particular importance with the boys we deal with here, because most of our children come from extremely dysfunctional families.
Mm-hmm.
And they come with a heritage that really isn't the most positive on families. So a lot of our time initially is really learning family roles and just the family makeup, and it's particularly based on biblical principles here. So as we live it, and then we teach it through our own Bible studies as far as the life incidents that happen and the way we discipline or the way we encourage, I mean, it's based upon these principles, and we try to teach that. So part of the teaching is intentional, part of it's spontaneous. Obviously, out of the 12 teenagers we have, we have five young men in that group. And so trying to teach them to deal with the issues of today, the issues of purity, the issues of integrity, all these things come up. So part of it is a picture of themselves coming into a relationship, mm-hmm. and the other is being able to picture the type of you know, woman, not just as a wife, but as mother. And so for many of them, that is a new picture. One specific teaching lesson we do every night right now is after we finish the evening's activities, before we go to bed, I try to pull the boys into just a quick couple-minute powwow, and we just talk about the day's events. You know, what do we struggle mm-hmm. with? What do we do well? And we try to pray for one another that way. And all of those things, we just learn how to communicate, how to depend on God, and hopefully those things will move into the importance of a marriage and the kind of woman that you want to have as the mother of your children.
We actually refer to it as purity powwow.
Oh, that's
and
that's
it's a
neat.
Time for them to be real about their struggles sexually, you know, because they're 18, some of them 17, which is a big issue, I think, for young boys, men in our culture.
Yes, yes. Well, Jean, what's the counterpart to that? What do you do to help your girls understand the importance of finding pure men and that will be loving and good fathers?
Well, we do family devotions pretty much. We try to every night, and then Paul does the purity powwow with the boys upstairs in one of their rooms. But part of it, we would list qualities and talk about qualities that they want. But I think an even bigger part is we make sure that there are other good role models for them outside of our marriage. And we do know several very strong marriages, role models, Christian role models that we would want you know, them to see that they are happy and loving. And we also watch how they are, you know, with their siblings or kids. We would suggest that if they're interested in them being fathers, you know, have them come into our family. How do they react? We have a lot of kids that are kind of hard to love. Andrew was a difficult child. You know, he slobbers. Luke was very... He had a major cleft lip and palate. You know, Maya just got out of an ex-fixator on her leg. I mean, how do they respond to things like this?
Yeah.
Because if it's important to you, for them to have a soft heart to that, or to your family even, you should be watching. And do you like how they respond? Mm-hmm. You know, we do a lot of communication. And we are also careful with who they spend time with, even in church. There are some role models of friends even that we don't want them around, and so we are particular.
Now, what was
your take
on that recent news story where the couple adopted that 7-year-old and then they said he was dangerous and there was, you know, they sent him back to the orphanage?
I will probably light up the boards with my response because I was angry at the adoption community. I was embarrassed.
Yeah.
I feel the mom was wrong. She definitely was wrong. I think she was brilliant and got very good legal advice because I don't think she'll be charged. I think what she did was horrible. But I think there was some truth in why she did it, and I don't think the adoption community, including agencies in the countries where these children come from, address enough the situation that makes these children like that.
Now, Jean, I don't want to go too much further without... Is there a way that your community helps you? Does your church help you? How could we support you in this ministry?
Well, obviously, I'm going to say prayer, but I would also say that Paul and I are highly influenced by George Mueller, a man who ministered to thousands of orphans in England. And he did not put, like, prayer requests out. He believed so strongly in the power of prayer. And he prayed, and he might have shared with his wife. And then the Lord provided the milk wagon to break down when they had no food the next morning. And I would say, you know, if anybody feels stirred in their heart to want to help our ministry, first of all, pray, and however the Lord tells you to do it. Also, seek God's will for your own lives and do it. You know, you may not be adopting like we are or interested in an orphan ministry like we are, but... The do it part is probably where I would encourage and it would bless me to hear. Even you can leave comments or even email me. I have a very easy email and it's also open, Mama Jean, JEANEB, @AOL.com. I love to hear. Or if you need encouragement in homeschooling or you're interested in adoption, it would bless me to know that I can be used to encourage somebody.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.